Our Old Testament reading today comes from the book of Isaiah, the 43rd chapter, verses 16 through 21. Let us listen to the word of the Lord. He who has made a way through the sea, a path through the mighty waters, who drew out the chariots and horses, the army and reinforcements together, and they lay there, never to rise again, extinguished, snuffed out like a wick. Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland. The wild animals honor me, the jackals and the owls, because I provide water in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland to give drink to my people, my chosen, the people I formed for myself, that they may proclaim my praise. This is the word of the Lord.
Our New Testament passage today is from John chapter 12, verses 1 through 8. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. 6 days before the Passover celebration began, Jesus arrived in Bethany, the home of Lazarus, the man he had raised from the dead. A dinner was prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha served, and Lazarus was among those who ate with him. Then Mary took a 12-ounce jar of expensive perfume made from the essence of nard, and she anointed Jesus' feet with it, wiping his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance. But Judas Iscariot, the disciple who would soon betray him, said, "That perfume was worth a year's wages. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor." Not that he cared for the poor. He was a thief, and since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. Jesus replied, "Leave her alone. She did this in preparation for my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me." This is the word of the Lord. So one of my favorite stories that I wish would have been something I had done, although its legality is dubious, is a story that Tony Campolo tells about his own childhood. And he grew up in Philadelphia, where apparently the night before Halloween was known as Mischief Night. And on Mischief Night, the young people would go around making mischief. And Tony Campolo describes the story, I hope it actually happened, I don't know if it did or not, but it's brilliant, of he and a friend breaking into the local five and dime. And instead of stealing anything, all they did was change the price tags. $20 radios are now 99 cents. 50-cent candy bars are now $7. They just took the price tags and switched them on all the different things. And of course, the next day, the cashiers have ultimate confusion, and the customers have this incredible confusion about what something is actually worth, right? Which is a powerful and wonderful metaphor for us and our world in getting the values of things mixed up. Thinking some things that really aren't worth that much are of great value. And thinking that some things which are of incredible and deep value are a little bit cheap and not worth our time or energy to invest in. This story that John describes is very much a story about value, about what matters, and about how we as humans get those things deeply wrong sometimes. Of course, those values are on clear display here, right? Because we have two main actors interacting with Jesus, Mary and Judas. The story is the context is one of table fellowship, which was the most important thing that happened in the ancient world. Who you sat with, who you reclined with and ate with was who you were one with. And this, the context of this is right on the heels of Jesus somewhat controversially raising Lazarus from the dead. And so he's there in their home sharing this wonderful celebration and fellowship. But of course, there's a little bit of a cloud over it because Jesus knows what's coming. He knows that this isn't going to end well for him. It's 6 days before the Passover, the text says, which the Passover is the annual celebration in Judaism of God's miraculous deliverance, of God leading his people out of Egypt, doing something for his people which they could not do for themselves. The text Alyssa read from Isaiah is this beautiful summary of that, which again has values in conflict, and I love this. I, the Lord, opened a way through the waters. We can't do that for ourselves, right? Not unless they're frozen and we've got a snow shovel. I made a way for you where there was no way. I called forth the mighty army of Egypt with all its chariots and horses. In our world, what matters most? Who has the biggest guns, right? My army beats your army, and I don't care what you believe or what your ideas are, he with the most guns wins. That's our cultural values. This is a story about what is of actual, eternal, real value. What happened to those mighty chariots and invincible army of the Egyptians? Where are they now? They're at the bottom of the Red Sea, right? I drew them beneath the waves. They drowned. Their lives snuffed out like a smoldering candle wick. And then God says, forget all that. If you are impressed with that, wait till you see this new thing I will do. This new deliverance, this new pathway through wilderness. Wilderness is, of course, the metaphor for Lent, the season that we are in, where Jesus spends 40 days in the wilderness, and we, as Jesus' followers, spend this time of metaphorically walking through wilderness, of examining our lives and looking at what matters, separating ourselves from some of the distractions of town. I will make a pathway through the wilderness. Passover is this remembrance and celebration of God delivering his people, of God making a way where there is no way, of God's presence with his people being the thing that is of ultimate value and concern, not how many armies they have or how many chariots or how strong, but is God's presence with them. So as Mary and Lazarus and the disciples are sitting around the table, eating together, celebrating God's deliverance, looking forward to God doing a new thing, Mary comes and does something absolutely extravagant, right? I mean, perfume was a big deal in the ancient cultures because, of course, scent can be a powerful thing for good or for evil. It's fascinating. I was doing some research on this last week, and there are actually pictures of ancient kings, both Egyptian pharaohs and some of the Persian kings. When they are carved in stone, they are depicted as holding perfume containers. It was something very much associated with the powerful, the wealthy, royalty, because it was incredibly expensive. This jar of perfume that she has, some texts say 300 denarii, that's the Greek that my version edits down to a year's worth of wages, which is this is a $50,000 jar of perfume. What could you do with 50,000 bucks? If I was just going to write you a $50,000 check and you're going to walk out of here, it's a new car. That's a nice new car. I could pay off the mortgage. Imagine how many poor people we could feed in Woodland with $50,000. That's what Judas thinks, sort of. So this story, she comes in and she does something. She pours out $50,000 for an olfactory experience that maybe lasts the day, right? Well, you probably smell the perfume in the house for a week or two. Who knows? But this is something that seems so transient, right? it seems like a total waste. Because $50,000. Of course, what is she doing with it? She is pouring it out as a symbol of presence and love and oneness with Jesus. She sees that he, unlike everyone else at the table, she understands. She's the one person who gets that Jesus is going for something, toward something incredibly difficult, painful, and scary. You, as a human being like me, know that when you are facing or going through something incredibly difficult, there is nothing better than someone who could step in and understand and be present with you in that. The gift that Mary is giving Jesus is not just one of extravagant perfume. It is one of understanding, love, and presence with Jesus in what he is about to go through. Nobody else is there. The disciples are all still thinking about who gets the best seat when he has Caesar's throne. But Mary understands. Mary gets that Jesus is about to go through something incredibly painful, difficult, isolating, scary. And she gives everything. She pours out her entire life on that. This is, of course, a beautiful and wonderful reflection of what Jesus is about to do, right? That heaven is coming down to earth. The extravagance of God giving himself, all of himself, for us. What Mary is doing here is such a beautiful mirror of God's generosity. She is moved by this love that she has felt from Jesus and is responding in kind, right? Like if God is pouring out heaven for her, she is pouring out all that she has for Jesus. If we think that the bottom line is money, we are never going to step in to an experience like this, right? If what I'm thinking about is how many clams this is, what I could be doing with this elsewhere, I am never going to pay that cost, right? Because why don't I just give him a hug? That's as good. Hey, I'll just tell him, Jesus, I love you. But that doesn't do the same thing, does it? This is one of the deep, profound truths about love. Love is extravagant. It is, in some ways, costly. That when we choose to love another person, we are choosing very much to give of ourselves. It is something that you cannot love without loss. And so when we love, we are signing ourselves up for grief and suffering. We're signing up for going along the roller coaster of that person's life. But this is precisely what Jesus is doing for us, right? When he becomes one with humanity, when he steps into our flesh and our planet, he's coming along for the ride and everything that entails. This is what love does. This, as Mark puts it in Matthew, she has done a beautiful thing. Judas is picking on her, and it's a logical, valid critique, right? Like, this is extravagant and wasteful. Of course, that's all predicated on one, that the value of money is transcending the importance of love. Do we think that? Yeah, well, most of the time that's going to be an unassumed value. That, like, love is nice, but can you pay the bills? As every parent says to their kid after they get engaged, right? Like, you're marrying for love. Well, how are you going to pay your mortgage? No. Like, love matters more. Oh, man, and I lost my train of thought. I had a second point there. Oh, I'll go with this one. Taking the time to be present and understand the people around us is one of the most powerful and best gifts we can give. That Mary is willing to be present with Jesus as he is going through this incredibly difficult time is one of the most amazing and best things that can be given. This beautiful thing that she is doing, this act of incredible beauty, is beautiful, of course, because it is extravagant. Beautiful because it is her being willing to enter into his suffering with him instead of just trying to make it better. She, Jesus says, is anointing my body for burial before I am killed. She's being present with me in this very difficult and hard situation. And there is few gifts we could give that are better than that. I believe that we live in a beautiful world. Driving down here, seeing the green hills, the wildflowers are everywhere. The trees are in blossom. If you walk over to the fellowship hall afterwards, open your eyes and see the bushes that have hundreds and hundreds of flowers each. This place was created for beauty. We as human beings, and of course all of that natural beauty pales in comparison to a beautiful act like love. Love, someone being willing to pour out all of who they are for someone else, is a beauty that transcends even the brightest sunset. What Mary does here is commended by God Himself as a beautiful act that is eternal, right? Wherever the gospel is preached, this act will be discussed because it is beautiful. Of all the values we put cheap price tags on, I think we as humans undervalue beauty over and over. Beauty seems to be to God something deeply important, right? Look at the world. Beauty matters to God deeply, and we are created for beauty. That's the other part of this. God has put the capacity for infinite acts of beauty within each one of us because God is present within each one of us, right? I mean, again, we get even beauty itself confused, and when I say that word, some of you are thinking about something you might buy at the makeup counter at the mall, right? Like, no, it is not the airbrushed picture in the magazine. Beauty is this way of being love, of showing kindness and generosity and compassion and care and presence with the people around us. We have, because we have God's Spirit in us, this capacity for infinite acts of beauty and grace on a daily basis, right? Where do we find suffering? On a daily basis. Where can we be moved just like Mary is to be present with those who are suffering, to show them our love of ourselves and who we are to them? This is beauty. This is what we are created for. Every single one of you, you are beautiful. God thinks you are beautiful. You are a beautiful human being because you bear the image of God. That light and that love will shine brightest when it is darkest, right? This incredible act of beauty is, of course, because it is leading up to this dark crucifixion, this horrible moment, this worst thing that Jesus is going through. This is so beautiful precisely because it is in that moment that Mary is present with Jesus, that she is giving all of who she is to that. I don't think that's a one-off. I think we are each invited into that. To see each day, I mean, another day, another dollar, right? What an impoverished way of living. To see a day as just an opportunity to make money or acquire things is a horribly poor life. These values, these ultimate values of love, of beauty, of generosity, of being willing to give of ourselves to something else, what does Mary get, even from Mary's perspective, right? She's giving up $50,000 worth of perfume. Something she could have had been set for life with, maybe. I don't know if it's that much, but you know, that's a lot. What does she get in return for that? Best thing ever, right? What are we talking about 2,000 years later? Love, connection, presence. When we start becoming aligned with God, with His presence in the world, with this goodness that God is seeking to pour out through us, it may take some sacrifice, but we are actually getting a screaming deal. These acts of generosity and love and presence, while they may appear costly on one level, pay off so much more than they ever cost. Might not get to do just what I wanted today if I step in and be present with that person. But what do I get in return? Presence, connection. I get to be the kind of person who adds beauty to this world and that person's life. I love the Elizabeth Barrett Browning quote, poem, "Earth crammed with heaven and every common bush afire with God. But only he who sees takes off his shoes. The rest just sit round and pluck blackberries." And while this is true, of course, of the natural world, I believe those bushes in the courtyard are crammed with the glory of God. This is deeply and even more profoundly true in every human being we encounter, of course, is crammed with heaven, right? Every single person we interface with is afire with God. But most of the time, we're just trying to make a buck. Let us take off our shoes. Let us pour out our perfume. Let us put being God's beautiful gift to the people around us as our highest value and goal this day and each day. Join me in singing our hymn, "What Wondrous Love," number 257.